This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval. Just saying. Yeah.
The blind guy feels it now, goes, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
And we'll begin, ladies and gentlemen. Ramya Muthan, of course, here with my co-host. We call this the Thursday Roundtable. We get into a discussion with our guest, which we'll bring on in just a moment. It's always fun to do. We've done this since the conception of the program, as a matter of fact. Pick a bunch of things to talk about, roll them out. Sometimes we have more of a theme and have some guests or guests that we visit with and chat. Mark Phoenix, one of our recurring guests on the program. Always love having him aboard. AMI TV audio editor. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir, and hello, ma'am. How are you two doing today?
Hello. Doing great. It's nice to have you back on.
It's always a pleasure.
I think today we've got, we're always talking, Mark, about the kind of the way the roundtable goes, the flow, the feel of it. Are we on a theme? Is it a normal roundtable or not? And sometimes it varies. Sometimes, we've even been known to sit here and talk sports for a roundtable. Usually Amuthan's away on vacation at that point, though.
Right.
But yeah. And then recently, Ramya hosted her first of the roundtable, and it was quite well done and really nice, as she had some great guests on and the good support of Brock Richardson co-hosting that day while I was away. Sir, I want to start with this one. You'll hear a different kind of background, some different backup voice, as a matter of fact, on Miranda Lambert's latest project. You'll hear some mooing cows. Lambert teamed with Jack Ingram and producer songwriter John Randall for an album called The Marfa Tapes. They recorded it in the small town of Marfa, Texas. Sometimes you can hear a campfire or coyotes in the background, maybe even a helicopter flying by. Randall says, as a music producer, he often wanted to fix that kind of thing. But this time, they decided to leave it all in. He says, for one thing, it would have been tough to take out everything. And for another, Lambert always made sure he had tequila before everyone else so he wouldn't care by the time they actually recorded. The Marfa Tapes are out now. Here's some sound of this, Lambert, Randall, and Ingram performing In His Arms. Take a little listen to this.
I've seen El Paso in the sky with on fire. Lost a night in war is a couple of times. Danced with a cowboy on a straight tequila. I wish I was in his arms tonight.
Now, I got to ask you what you're hearing in this. What background sound can you pick up?
Wow.
A lot of wind.
Yep.
I'm sitting here swaying listening to this, by the way. I'm just having a great time.
Do you hear the fire?
Yep.
A little bit. It's tricky over this connection, but...
Mark, that quality, the way their voices sound, too, that would be traditionally something you'd say, no, you can't have that, because they sound not just off mic a bit, but almost like the mic's being protected almost from that wind or something.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a big difference between, you know, recording something in a studio with all the latest whiz-bang tools and plopping into a field, setting up some microphones, and just having a blast. And frankly, there's something I appreciate about that, particularly in this age of heavily overprocessed music. Oh, Kelly, you don't realize you've just hopped on one of my hobby horses.
That's kind of why I selected this. I want you to hold on that for just a sec, Mark. We'll come back to this because I thought this could be a very interesting discussion. But Ram, I want to know, why do you think, if you think this isn't okay, why do you think this is the right time for them just to say, what the heck, let's put this out way?
Oh, it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. I think that the timing is great. It's gorgeous because you know, in some weird way, it all comes round and round in circles with people performing in their homes, people feeling more vulnerable to show us where they live and their own backgrounds, and having these mini concerts of like recording on our iPhones. You know, maybe it's not the iPhone necessarily, but you know what I mean? Like just having this live aspect. So that's what this sounds like to me. It sounds like singing around a campfire or whatever the feeling may be to you, but just recording so organically. I mean, obviously there's some processing going on to make it sound like that, right? But I've had jam sessions with people in every random place, right? And all odd places and practicing in stairwells and all this kind of stuff, where that's what this reminds me of. It just feels like you're having a time and somebody else is in on it. Or, you know, Kelly, like if I recorded something to you just in my living room and sent it to you,
that's
and
right.
That's just what it sounds like.
Now, a couple of years ago, some artists did it in Alberta in a cave. And I thought, wow, that would be really cool. The sound, depending obviously what they were playing. And I think the kind of music is going to lend itself to it, but I'm not so sure. Certain types are going to be better. This sounds more like that. Sit around outside, not sure the airplane passing over or some of the other things that they mentioned would be the same, but you still have that feel. It's outside, not a concert venue. Like I'm waiting for someone to go into a big concert venue empty because of the way things are right now and record something in that form and just say, look, this is it. Does this happen, Ramya, without it being the time that it is, without the virus? Do we have this kind of, why not just throw it together because people have been putting all sorts of stuff out there with whatever quality it is what it is?
Yeah, but I think if we didn't have the pandemic and we just went straight into doing something like this and making it mainstream or well known at least, right? Let's say in 2019, I don't think people would take to it as easily. Like it's not something that we'd talk about so often or share or it go viral. But now that we've kind of eased ourselves into what this sound could mean for feelings, right? For authenticity and for feelings, I think it fits so perfectly in the time, Kels.
Now, I don't know about the rest of the album. Mark, put yourself back 2019. Are you tolerating this kind of thing?
Frankly, I would. I might be an outlier in this, but I've just grown so bored with perfectly processed and polished vocals where between songs, you can't tell artists apart anymore. They sound the same. And there seems to be like a new EQ setting for every year or every couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing, Ramya, when you were talking about how live this, you know, the feeling of something being done live and off the floor, I'm sitting here nodding along because it's something I miss so desperately from my own early days of, you know, learning how to do sound and recording and the whole idea of getting something live off the floor, or in this case, live out of the field. Thinking back to all these artists where, you know, on these performers where they'd have to hit it right the first or second time because you didn't have multi-tracking. You had limited studio time and everyone was in either the same room or a couple of rooms. If you want to, you know, go listen to an old Ella Fitzgerald hit, and she's got a lot of them. And those are excellent every single time. But you can also hear the imperfections, the way certain, you know, people play certain notes differently.
Yeah.
There's a naturalness about it, which I think people today either miss or have never experienced. And I think this kind of thing would just blow their minds.
Even live stuff is really worked on so that you don't have some of that, whether they're recording six or seven concerts to get the closest to the way they want it to be without whatever clunker or clinker or sound that might be in there. Now, Mark, as an audio person, it's kind of a weird dichotomy that we have. You, as someone getting sound for a show, would love to go out in the field, create that audio, record, like capture it and utilize it for something if you were putting something into a show. Whereas the music industry, as you mentioned, the EQ, all the work done like that, in a lot of cases wants that perfect sound that we're going to want without any little thing in there. It's really interesting as a person who loves audio, how we can live both worlds and up until recent, I think, be comfortable with, oh yeah, we need this very processed and EQ'd, it's got to sound perfect, but yet, oh, we're creating this TV show, I've got to go out and actually get the sound of the waves off that beach in California. Well, why don't you just get it off the waves and off the beach and off of the Atlantic out there outside of Boston? No, I need the California beach. That's what this film is. It's taking place there.
Well, it's interesting when you start listening to a lot of that background noise, how much of it replicates.
Yes.
There's one particular piece of bird song, which I first realized I was hearing in the menu screen for an Oz DVD. You remember that HBO show Oz about prison?
The prison one? Yeah.
And there's this like one really particular bird song bit, which now that I recognize it, I hear it everywhere.
Yeah.
So it's really amazing just how much of even something that sounds natural is heavily constructed. But you make an excellent point. You want a real, you know, something environmental, something that sounds real, something that doesn't sound like it was had all the life processed out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And in music production, you know, I think things have gone way over the line from, you know, just wanting to be able to clean things up and do some neat tricks to, you know, let's put stuff that could practically have come out of a computer program beginning to end. So many people, artists, big artists these days who, you know, you put them through the studio and processing, they sound great. You put them on a stage and you're wondering how this person ever got a career.
Yeah.
And it's not something, you know,
well, and you'll get that just
it's
like
not,
actors, right?
Exactly.
Well, people will say, I want my perfect best take and I want approval. And in my contract, I get last shot and I get to approve every one of the lines that you're using. I'll tell you the one to keep. Rumi, is there any particular sound that you can throw to as a musician from somebody's work or something that you've always really liked? And when it comes on, there's a certain sound, a certain feel a particular song brings.
Well, and I'm sure I've said this before, but anything percussive, right? And especially when we're talking, hand drums, like not as much 808 and things, but hand drums just make me, I pay such close attention to when I hear percussion on music, and I just can barely take in what we now use, which is just samples of everything, right? That, like, you don't hear as much authentic hand drumming. I got to listen to music like from way back to hear anything that sounds real, like not just fake stuff sounding real, but real, like recorded in studio on a for real drum.
Yeah.
And that's what it does make me think, like, it's not, at some point or another, we decided that it's okay to do everything synthetically, mm-hmm. right?
Like I think about that everything. As much as I talk always about having my wonderful sound system, I'll still listen to my old radio shows from the 40s, 50s, TV shows from the 70s, 80s, not where stuff was done that way, where you can listen to the music. It's not as perfect. People may say, oh, you know, it really has a 70s feel, but as a lot of the old timers will say, that's back when there was real instruments.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's why when, Mark, you're talking about real performances or stage performances, that vibe to me is just completely different from listening to something on the radio, period. Because you know these people are standing there at their concerts, no matter how big, right? And doing like actual playing of instruments or singing. I mean, you know, minus the auto-tune and all that stuff that you can do live now. But you're just getting the feel of, wow, these people are in front of me and this is a real orchestra. And that's what I think one of my biggest like loves for live concerts is, you know, and that's the line we're blurring a little bit now as well.
Okay. Okay, guys.
Funny.
Excellent. Oh, go ahead, Mark.
Can I jump in real quick? Well, it's funny you bring that up because there was a live performance I saw by a band about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were recording a live album on the tour at the time. They'd done like North American and European wings. And when the album actually came out, I listened to it. And I was able to just, you know, imagine myself back in that audience, all these people around me, you know, place smelling of, you know, sweat and whatnot, you know, 5,000 metalheads all headbanging to this music, which I had heard, and right down to the imperfections and the vocals and the timing. And it was wonderful.
Yeah.
It's something you just can't get from something polished to the nines.
And certain music is accepting and more encouraging of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Acoustic stuff that you can't polish that easily.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Okay, guys, want to throw this one at you. California plans to try to steer new homes away from gas appliances.
New homes in California would be required to be equipped with circuits and panels that support all electric appliances for heating, cooking, and drying clothes under a new draft building standards code. It's from the California Energy Commission. If the panel okays it in August, the new code would take effect New Year's Day 2023, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. The state would not ban gas, but the aims to lead builders to construct all electric structures to cut California's greenhouse gas emissions. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Rumya, when we were talking the other day about lawnmowers, I mentioned the electric ones and how there's a return of a push for them because of the cleaner and quieter, because of noise pollution and things like that. Is this the kind of thing, if you saw Toronto, do you would really appreciate? Because, I don't know, some people really have the problem with the heat, how hot gas is, having it in their homes. I don't know if you've ever worked with it.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I think we're just heading this way in general. Like, it used to be that gas is the primary way of doing things, right? Now we're moving to electric and all these different options and scenarios. Might as well have it there available for, like, even if it's not necessarily that you have a fear of gas things, but it's really just that this is now where we're headed, where we're going for efficiency or otherwise. And why not? I just don't see why we wouldn't be doing it. And clearly the push for it is necessary to head this way anyway.
I remember having a gas stove, and of course it gets a bit grimier and everything like that, but it was the quality of cooking because of the heat that people I know that are really into their cooking, Mark, will say. How about yourself, Mark, as a person with a vision impairment? Does it matter to you either way, or do you have a cooking interest and say, I would rather gas, or no, I don't care?
I am one of those people who does have a fear of working with gas-based systems because of the probable possibility for catastrophic failure, shall I put it. Yeah. My dad was a firefighter, and I learned very quickly about fire safety and being careful around things like open flames and gas systems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had gas-fired heat. It ran reasonably well. But if something had gone wrong, I wouldn't have known what to do.
Nope.
It's not a disaster scenario I would have wanted to deal with. And I understand the matter of, you know, getting a cleaner, smoother heat from, you know, a gas ring versus an electrically heated, I don't even know what they're called now. The plates that you put, on an electric stove. They're not grills. There's another.
No, but you mean like the ones that you don't feel, the glass top on glass top stoves, you mean?
Oh, I wish we had those. No, I mean the older ones. Chunk of metal, just spiraling.
Like the coils?
The eye.
Yeah,
the eye.
Thank you. Yeah, how you don't get as consistent and smooth a cook out of that. But on the other hand, I don't have to worry about the gas line cracking or something and having to deal with that disaster scenario.
Yeah. Mark, as usual, pal, appreciate you coming on. And we really zipped through this one today.
Oh, always a blast. Always a pleasure to chat with you both.
Mark Phoenix, TV audio editor over there, and he joins us when we can get him on the roundtable, and we thank him for doing so today. Thank you for being there. Rum, of course, thank you for your contribution. Some good conversation. We'll take a break.
Absolutely.
See what's coming up tomorrow on our program. We'll check out with Now at Dave Brown and see what they've got on tap for the Friday edition. Stand by.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.